Everything? I'm sure all day, right? No work, no shopping. We have to be practicing the 48 ways. We have to stay focused, right? So we're 100%. We got it's all chazara. That's what that was the first of the ways. Constant Talmud, constant review. It's consistency.
Yes, this morning, there was a prison show which I didn't know.
Yes, so yes.
And I wanted to go, and I didn't. And then I had a show.
Okay. And how did you feel after that? Much better. Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. We really should. I didn't bring with me, but okay, we'll start off. Again, this is based, we're at way number 7. This is based on Pirkei Avos in the 6th Perek. It talks about how, Be'arba Mishmona Devarim, the Torah is acquired, I always like to repeat in the beginning, with 48 ways. The first one is Talmud, by constant learning. The second one is Shmiya Sa'ozen, by listening. Third one is Barichas Fasayim, we said speaking out loud. The fourth one we just started is Bevinas Halev. The fourth one is Bevinas Halev, with understanding of the heart. We just started, we're just doing the intro. We started 20 seconds ago. And Besich. Here we are, we even have handouts. Hello? And the next one. Okay, how are we doing? This is a moving experience. It is. It's a moving experience. Look, standing room only. Standing room only. This is wonderful. Even if we do B'chavrusa one-on-one. That's right. Again, like I told the other ladies, I'm sure you're practicing all day long. You're talking to yourself. You're pumping. All that's what we. It's all in the chazara and in the practice, right? Otherwise, it's just in the air. Okay, thank you so much, and thank you for the email earlier. I didn't open it, but I got it. Sense. Thank you so much. I wanted to talk to you about that. Maybe that would be great. Okay. So we're at way number 7. Ready, Taka. We're here, 1/7 of the way, almost. Way number 7 is true charisma. True charisma. That sounds like a good topic, so that caught my eye also. Humility is not an inferiority complex. Humility is not an inferiority complex. It's doing the right thing and not being dependent on the opinion of others. Again, humility is not an inferiority complex. It's doing the right thing and not being dependent on the humility of others. What did I say?
But that seems to be certain, not being, you. I mean, that doesn't sound like a person. Humility.
It's not an inferior practice. I'm a nobody, ich bin gornisht. It's not that, as we'll see. It's doing the right thing, number one, but not being dependent on the opinion of others, not in a cocky way.
It's
the right thing. It's the right thing. It's the right thing, as we'll see. I have one more. You like to write in the back, right? So you don't look in the front. Okay. Okay. We'll get to that. A movie star enters the party, strutting, cocky, head raised. His manner shouts, "I'm great," and we all know it. The room is silent with awe, charisma. Judaism, Yiddish guy, calls this counterfeit charisma. The movie star is totally dependent on external factors over which he has no control. Without adoring fans, he has nothing. Is that such a great insight? We all think the person is great, but they're the lowest of the low, because they, without the fans, they feel like nothing.
You know what? I have a theory. This might be hard to say, but I don't think it's not only movie stars. I think it's
people in general.
I think it's terrible. I think it's people, rabbanim, achanchim, principals, who have to kowtow to all these other people and be in their good graces. And they have to, like, sort of almost change
not
their personalities.
Not almost.
No, but a lot.
Most not. There are always going to be a few people that have an issue. Right, there's some people.
It's a challenge for them. Because they fall into this race. Right.
I think it's a bigger challenge today. I think years ago, Rabbanim, people generally held a higher esteem. Mm-hmm. Some people more learned today, and they think there was much. And so, therefore, I mean, my father was a rabbi. He used to tell me years ago, it was much higher. And as people became more and more knowledgeable, they think they know better. And
wealthy.
They,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It wasn't a bunch of people in the Kleinstädtel. Mm-hmm. Right. Farmers. Right. Or
it's a different attitude. And right. The psychologists but have taught everybody. It's all for me. So
right, but one of the things to keep in mind, because it's easy to have that, and again, I'm human also. Sometimes, really, I'm telling you the MS, I really mean it. Sometimes we think that the person that we're looking at thinks very highly of themselves, but it's not always the case. Right, right. We're assuming because they look like they're talking or they're walking or they have the title. We think because we think it seems that way, but they often don't. I've encountered that with many great people, and my first reaction was the exact reaction. And after you get to know them, then you see it. You're totally, totally off.
See, that's what my work when I have my radio program, my network program, is like, let politicians and all people that look like they're big shots, now learn one thing, everybody's a human being.
Right. Right. We're all human. We're all human. And here we're going to see what the true charisma is. So let's see. Way number 7, which is what we're talking about tonight, teaches that the path to genuine charisma is ba'anava. Anava means humility. Does humility really generate charisma? Don't we usually imagine the humble person as meek, hunched over, and barely noticeable? Let's define our terms. Again, that's Reb Noach all the time. We throw around terms our whole life. We have to define our terms. He's consistent. Humility is not an inferiority complex or lack of self-esteem. Humility means living with the reality that nothing matters except doing the right thing. And that's what I underlined. Humility means nothing matters except doing the right thing. The humble person is totally dedicated to the pursuit of truth. And because his self-esteem is not dependent on approval from others, he can choose the right thing even when it's not popular or politically correct. That's a hard thing to do.
So maybe couldn't he come across? He could come across as if he's trying to get us Haramban.
That would be Geras Haramban. Right. What about it?
Well, right. He writes to
right.
His son.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He writes that you're supposed to be humble and
before everyone.
I don't know exactly.
Exactly. The words, right.
That's right. He says the person who's rich is rich because he's born short of many riches.
Right, right. The Geras Ramban, he writes within the letter itself, the Ramban, that we should read it, or that he, and it's referring to us also, to read it every week. Exactly, exactly, exactly. Moshe Rabbeinu had it. We're going to talk about him. We're going to talk about him here.
Misunderstand his strength as arrogance?
Could who misunderstand?
If a person is right. humble and he's dedicated to pursuing
right.
the truth, that means he's not going to give in to anybody and nobody if he thinks he's doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So even though he's humble, he could perhaps even come across as that.
He could come across, but the question is how you do it. You can't say, I am right and everybody jump in the lake. Right. Presentation is a strong part of it. And the Igeres Haramban is tremendous. Again, he does write to read it every week. Right, exactly. Right, Rabbi Foyer, it's tremendous. He writes Rabbi Foyer. It's tremendous. It's right. Very impressive. 2 points, Mrs. Weitzman. It's great that we gave it out at my son's bar mitzvah. It was I actually gave it to my wife before we got married. I said, "You read this book." I said so, but it's with one of the conditions: read the book, learn. You know, so. Okay, an arrogant person, on the other hand, is mostly concerned with his own ego, his own pride, his own money. So even though he appears friendly and charming, he's really manipulating things to suit his selfish needs. You see, a person could look charming and all that, but they're manipulating. Arrogance equals I'm all that counts. Humility is what's greater than me that counts. It's funny. That's how we're starting. Again, a difference, again, we often think of humility as a humble person, that the person is hunched over. That's absolutely incorrect. There are many humble people, like Moshe Rabbeinu was pointed out, who we're going to talk about soon, that they know that Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Rav has spoken about this several times, he knew who he was. It's not like he didn't know. But the Torah writes, you can't get a better shtempel than the last part of the Torah, which says that Moshe was the Anav Mikol Adam. He was the most humble person in the world. So you would think you'd write, Moshe spoke to Hashem. If you'd be writing at the end, Moshe was great. Moshe accepted the Luchos. Moshe split the sea. He was the humblest. Again, that wouldn't even make the list of the top 10. But it made the list. And the fact that we could say that about him is just tremendous. That he had everything. He spoke face to face with Hashem. We can't even understand what that means. And he was the humblest. That doesn't make any sense. But that is true charisma. He knew what he had. But he said, it's a gift that I have from Hashem. It's not me. I'm doing the right thing. I have to talk to Hashem and split the Yam Suf, and somebody else has to do something for his family. All on our level to know that it's not me that counts, it's Hashem.
Well, he was subservient to the law, but he gave his life to the law of Hashem.
Right, right. Eved Hashem. It says both in Parashat Zosa Bracha that he was an Anav, we call Adam, and that he was Eved Hashem. That was, again, as Rabbi Rudinsky has said many times, that it says Moshe Eved Hashem. That's the greatest thing we can write again. Write down that he received the Torah. Write that he split the Yam Suf. Write down that he was the one, the conduit for the Makkos. We're saying he was Eved Hashem. Okay.
So that was how he saw himself. That's
how he saw himself, and that is the greatest. Right. Right. Exactly. That is his greatness. What are we here for? 120 years. We are here for that, to be an Eben Hashem. This is how to do it. And that's true charisma. You could be charismatic, but be an Eben Hashem and know that that's first.
Because Hashem told him outright what he had to do. We ain't that lucky.
He had to work. If you look at the Midrash, again, it's an easy read, and the Midrash says he didn't just walk in and say, Ich bin du, I'm Moses. He had to work. Moshe, people don't know, was to spend 10 years in Midian in prison. That's a day, a second day, a third day. He spent 10 years. The Avram and Moshe, these people didn't walk in. They only got to where they got later in life. And they had like David, Amalek, great challenges. That what?
People forget that.
People forget that. We see the end.
Even Adullam today, they weren't born that.
Exactly,
day.
Right.
But you look
right.
At, you know,
right. They got there. We're just what was it? I've been listening again to the CD. I forgot his name. He's an Israeli who's been giving these tremendous CDs. I got, and right, he talks about, he's speaking about Rav Eliashiv. Rav Eliashiv, talking about greatness. His grandson, his great-grandson, they asked him in his later years to stay with him for a few months. So this Rav, I forgot his name, asked the great-grandson. So he spent 3 or 4 months with him before he passed away. He said, tell me, you must have had so many conversations. He said, if I tell you, you can't even believe this, it's beyond our comprehension, at least mine. He says, if I tell you, I was there 3 or 4 months, I did not speak to him once. He, in the latter part of his years, from 16 on, the last 30 years of his life, he said his body was physically here, but his mind was totally in Shemaim. I didn't speak to him once, and he wouldn't even know that I was there. We can't understand, and some of us think he's not taking care of him. This was an adult. That's why he's a gadol, and the rest of us are not at that level. But he worked. Somebody who got to that level had to work. You don't seem to like that so much.
No, understand it.
Right, we can't understand it. Right, transcending the pettiness. Again, this word, by the way. What do we say, pettiness? What do we say about pettiness? Remember last time? Mm. Pettiness is so.
It's so petty.
That's my line. Pettiness is so petty. I can't think of anything better than that. And Reb Noach, again, that simple insight that he says, how can we be petty? The life is so short to be petty. Despite his smooth exterior, the arrogant person is ironically restrained and inhibited from expressing his true self. How can he, quote unquote, be himself when he's constantly preoccupied with how he appears in the eyes of others? Humility is freedom. When you're only concerned about the truth and living by it, then you're free to express yourself in the most genuine and uninhibited way. Your natural beauty shines through. That's real charisma. The Torah tells us that the most humble person of all time, Moshe, was not coincidentally also the most charismatic. I didn't know that, by the way, when I saw this. I'd like to see Makar. I'll have to find out where the source of that is. The fact that he's humble is befeirish, explicit in the Torah. Charismatic, I didn't know. As a teacher of the Torah, Moshe had a quiet confidence in the justness of his cause. He could not be rattled by rebels or complaints, and that's what earned him the greatest respect.
He had a lot of complaints to do.
Yeah, he had a lot of them. With such genuine self-confidence, the humble person has transcended the mundane pettiness of this world. He doesn't have to answer every insult. A great line.
It says about Moshe could not be rattled by rebels or complaints.
Right.
Isn't that why they said he hit the stone the second time?
So Mar, again, on his level, there are many, many commentaries on him hitting the stone. Again, he was on a higher level. He was trying to show them a lesson. But he didn't. Again, as you see through the Torah, there were so many complaints, but he did what was the right thing. At that point, he thought that that was the right thing to do.
He was kind of upset, like once he said to Hashem, leave me alone, why did you give me this burden? It's not that he just was...
But that was also on behalf of Klal Yisrael. When he also, he said, Mecheni nami sifrecha, and again, there were times, again, we Jews, as we know, are very stubborn people. So he had, but in general, he was able to withstand. Most of us couldn't handle being the leader for 10 minutes. It's like I say that in retail, when I see somebody in retail. I couldn't handle retail for 10 minutes. So he couldn't, Moshe could not, was again, handling Klal Yisrael. At certain times, he did what he felt he had to do. And you're correct, in that particular time, he was punished for that on his level. But he says here he doesn't have to answer every insult. He can rise above arguments. That was a great lesson to me on the line that you figure it's olive base. Somebody insults me. I don't need to take out a baseball bat, but I have to say something. You don't have to say something. He knows his place and helps others find their place too. He makes everyone feel important because with a humble person, if others excel, there is no jealousy or risk of an ego crisis. Have you ever met such a person? It draws you like a magnet. Wouldn't you like some of that charisma? Again, the lessons here for us to internalize and practice. These things don't come naturally to everybody. The human need for meaning. Because humility is predicated on the pursuit of truth, it fuels the basic human need for meaning. We see that people are searching for meaning in life. You'll notice this more now. The Ikfas of the Mashiach, which we're in now, latter part of life. Again, you're seeing what's going on in the past 100 years. There's so many more people looking for meaning. That's one of the elements that we see by towards the Mashiach time. Almost everyone wants to help the needy, the poor, the hungry, and the homeless. And many people choose helping careers like healthcare and social work. Money alone is not enough pleasure to carry one through a lifetime. Unfortunately, we often get sidetracked by the mundane issues of daily life. Amidst all the errands, meetings, and emails, we lose clarity on what is ultimately meaningful. One way to focus is to ask yourself the question we've asked several times, what am I living for? Again, this is the tough question, but this is the thing we have to be thinking about every single day of our life. Am I eating to live or am I living to eat? Do I work to live or live to work? This is something we can't go by just every year by tax season. You know, what am I living for? Okay, to Dveikus Bashem, move on. We have to be doing that on a daily basis. Every day, I don't even remember this, every day you have to re-ask these questions. This will help keep your job, relationships, and overall goals in perspective. So what are you living for? Do some research. See if your life goal is truly meaningful or just some abstract notion. Again, this is a goal. Like you're doing your finances, you're setting up other goals in life. Rabbi Avi Shulman has a great CD on it. He breaks it down, I believe, into five ways. He says, look at your relationships. That could be family or other relationships. Look at your spiritual. Look at your career. Look at your wealth. And look at your health. And so those are things, again, that I give into one of my kids to listen to, and I try to listen to also. But this is something which would fall maybe under spiritual, but it's the key to life. Why am I here? And again, like we said in an earlier lecture, or two, or three, most of us never ask that question. Most of us never. We never ask that question again.
If you ask them, you don't always get an answer, because
we don't know. We don't know. And that's what to work with. I answered it like most from guys a couple of years ago when Rabbi Korin asked me the first time, what are you doing here? I said, to keep the Torah. But that's not the right answer. Sounds good on paper, and it's what we're trained with, but that's not it. The answer of Noach said is to get... pleasure. And then we better have a class on one of those that we should have. What does pleasure mean? What is pleasure? Right. And exactly. And they spend their life on what Rav Noach calls fifth level pleasure.
Right.
It's the lowest. That is a pleasure. Ice cream and most of what we're spending 99% of our time on, houses, money, vacation, all of this stuff. It, what? Right. All of this stuff. What is the word he also uses? Decadence. That we're spending so much. That's what we spend all of our time on. But there's so more to it, and I hope to do one of those lectures. Okay. If you hear a voice say there's no real objective purpose to my life, check out whether that's true before you concede. Don't give up so quickly. Another great line. Don't fall in with the cynics. I thought that was a great line. Don't fall in with the cynics.
Can I say the definition of a cynic?
Please. Who knows the price of everything, but the value. Very good. Thank you so much, Mrs. Minza. Really? And you remembered that? Wow. Kol hakavod. Kol hakavod. Meaning is too vital to ignore. Just like food and water, your health depends on it. That's meaning. Again, like we've said before, that wisdom is to the soul like food is to the body. We need wisdom. We need it the same way our body needs the fuel. Wisdom is to the soul. We can't live without wisdom. I was just listening to a class yesterday from one of these internet marketing experts, and what he was he has this social media kind of business, one of these great internet businesses, and he says most of the people, and he read somewhere, did a study, that when people accept a job, money is only number three. The really bright people, number one, number one for the people who really want, their number one reason to choose a position is to learn. For the, I guess the people that come to him, I don't know if that applies to the whole country. The number, they want wisdom. People, this is even in the secular world, imagine us. Number one is wisdom. I don't know if two was meaning, I forgot number two, but look, money didn't make it to the top five. Yeah. Don't get me wrong.
Maybe because it's something they enjoy doing wisdom.
Right, but they want to grow. They want to be challenged, they want to grow. So it's a human innate nature, and Baruch Hashem, that's Judaism, so we have to tap into that. We want to grow. We want to learn. Do the right thing. Doing the right thing is often difficult because we don't always perceive it as providing a great source of pleasure. If you think about it, you'll see there is no greater pleasure. There's nothing better than doing the right thing. Material pleasures are necessary and nice. In Judaism, we don't throw that out. We don't say go be a monastery and go live like a monk. Pleasures are necessary and nice, but they do not compare to the high pleasures of love and meaning. Imagine being offered $10 million in exchange for one of your children. After rejecting the offer... Usually the men would say that. The men would say, $10 million, I'll take it for 2 months.
I'll give you two.
I'll give you two, great. That's cool. Imagine being offered $10 million in exchange for one of your children. After rejecting the offer, you'll be overwhelmed with the precious value of that child. You may have always known his worth on an intellectual level, but now it becomes real to you. Similarly, if you were given the choice of killing 1,000 innocent children, I would even say one, or being killed yourself, you know what you'd choose. Even though this scenario is extreme, it reveals something deep in the psyche of every human being. Being good is so important that we're even willing to die for it.
Right.
You see people. It's mamish. Again, we're living in historical times. We have to take from this and grow. We have to... what is your cause? Let's take this a step further. If you're willing to die in order to be good, the corollary is that there is no higher goal in living than being good. If you're willing to die to be good, then again, there's no higher goal in living than being good because I'm willing to give up my life to be good. That's what he said. Reb Noach used to say all the time. If you know I'm willing to die for Judaism, then live for it. If this is what you're willing to die for, don't wait till 120, then live for it. That's here. All of the classes are about life, if you're noticing. I'm picking this up as I'm doing it with you also. The classes are all about life, living, as I said in the last lecture. Most of humanity are walking zombies. We're going through the process of waking up and coffee and davening and going to work and coming back and doing the laundry. The point of it is to be alive every second. What is your cause? Now let's take this a step further. If you're willing to die, we just said that. Ultimately, everyone is dying for a cause. World peace, save the wills, political reform. Everyone is dedicated to something. The only question that remains, therefore, is what is your cause? Sit down and figure out what you're willing to die for. Read eulogies. You see, this is getting a little morbid like last time. It's not as bad as last time. Everybody bring your eulogies next time, okay? Okay, we'll read it together. Okay, there are good doses of humility. That's true. They help us understand the meaning of life. Try writing your own obituary. Again, this sounds heavy. This sounds heavy, but it is so eye-opening. It could change your life. That one lesson, if you slept through the rest of it, of everything we said, that line alone is worth all 48 classes.
Has paid a really good person. I mean, sometimes I sit and think, boy, they could never say that about me.
They could say it. You learn,
when
but
you go to Hespit, you just
to learn. That's the point of it, right? Exactly. That's the point of a Hespit. To one of the points. It's tremendous. The interesting thing, it makes you think it's morbid, but this energizes us. It's inspiring. We should get up in the morning. I spoke to the girls here by YSV. They asked me to speak a few minutes because we went, a couple of guys took off a whole Sunday, and we went to help in Far Rockaway. Awesome, right? But it's still a lesson. Again, some people were doing it for weeks and not sleeping at night. So I spoke to them, and one of the things I told them, I said, girls, in 10, 20, 30, 40 years, grandchildren and Yirat Hashem children are going to say, did you really live through Hurricane Sandy? And they're going to say yes. And they're going to say, were there really basements that were flooded? There were fish in the basements and houses totally got crushed? Yes, and people didn't have food. Normal, comfortable people didn't have food or clothing. Is that true? And I said, one of them might say, what did you do? And the truth is, that encouraged me also a little bit. I mean, it helped them when Dovi Kogel called and said, you better get some guys down here because you have the biggest shul in the neighborhood. Bring some guys down. But what do we do? So I'm not saying now we all have to get together in our ski jackets and go down there and start cutting sheetrock, and pulling off paneling from the basements. But this is in life. And what we have to write, I tell them, write your own story. It's the same thing over here. To write, be a couple of steps ahead. What do we want to be said about us? For what do you want to be remembered? That gives you objectivity and perspective. Like we said now, it energizes us. Once you've found a cause so meaningful that you'd forfeit your life for it, then you've the answer to the more important question, what you should be living for. I'm willing to die for X, that means I'm willing to live for it. And when you indeed live for that cause, you will have unparalleled power, purpose, and pleasure. The three P's. Now make a plan to implement this into your daily life. If you do everything we talk about over here, you won't work. We should all get like a T-shirt, 48 ways. Go out and bring it home. Okay.
You're in charge.
I'm in charge. Okay, boot camp, 5 in the morning by the track, okay? No games here, okay. Start slowly, taking one step at a time, so not to be overwhelmed. You see, he's smart, something called incremental. I'm reading a negotiation book also, which is tremendous. Nothing to do with this, it's called Getting More. Actually, one of the guys in the shul gave it to me. Jonathan Altman gave me this book. I don't know how or what. He said, Chesky, I think you'll like this book. It sat on my desk for weeks. I started reading it now. I'm taking notes on it like I'm doing with 48 Ways Like a Safer. And one of the things he talks about in there, negotiation, is called incremental. I'm giving you a good tip over here. This Stuart Diamond, he teaches at Wharton. He teaches the top companies in the entire world. He's one of the top negotiators on the planet. And I've listened to some negotiation books, and one of his 12 or 15 principles is incremental, meaning you don't go to your wife and say, listen, I'd like you to, if you can cook for me and buy me a present and this, you got to go one step. It's got to be incremental. Same thing you can use for ourselves. If we're overwhelmed, incremental, right. Again, that was hard for me to figure out, but it's simple for some people, but that is something very good, incremental. Okay, start slowly, keep your eye on the goal, engage your progress every day. Connecting with your ultimate purpose is a big project, but there's no better use of your time and energy. Are you up to the challenge? Okay, we're up to now. Do it for the right reason. Doing the right thing is a high level, but there's a higher level still. You also have to do the right thing for the right reason. Why? Because it's the right thing to do. If you do the right thing for selfish reasons, so you can brag about your accomplishments, you end up feeling lousy about yourself. Meaning you can do the right thing for the wrong reasons. The story is told of a great rabbi, this is awesome, on his deathbed, praying with great intensity. His students were gathered around and asked, "Rabbi, what are you thinking at this moment?" Answered the rabbi, "A little voice inside me is saying, quote, pray with great intensity so your students will be impressed." You believe this? Even at the moment of death, this great sage was battling his ego. The Yetzer Hara is with us from the day we're born until the last second. The last second. We're too young, but it says, in other words, a bar mitzvah boy, the reason why the father says Baruch Shem Patrani, and when the reason a bar mitzvah boy or a girl is born then, is because for the first time, they get their Yetzer Tov. They're responsible for themselves, Baruch Shem Patrani, that's correct. For the first, right, when they're a baby, they don't see it, you know, and they haven't been able. But when you're born, you have a Yetzer Hara. Again, you're not mature yet, but you only get your Yetzer Tov. Is this fascinating? You only get it, you can only really do good when you're bar bas mitzvah. So it's in us, it's just waiting for us to develop a little bit. But it's a tremendous, that's what we're here for, to challenge that. Now, true charisma comes when we disengage ourselves from the need for outside approval. So do the right thing for the right reason, no matter what the consequences may be. It's the greatest feeling in the world. Again, he didn't come back, we said this on the first page. We didn't talk about it much right now, but again, it's a hard thing to do for many of us, but not to be concerned what other people think about. That's a hard thing to do. It is hard. But when you do that, you feel great. Hashem, the ultimate in meaning. In the pursuit of meaningful achievement, what makes a person more impactful?
But you know what? You have to be careful sometimes just because you feel you want to do something. What if what you might not be fighting for the right thing?
Right.
You may not be...
Right.
Right.
Right. So we, and this is part of, this is one of 48. Part of the, one of the ones we already learned is we got to listen. It can't be, I think this is right. I'm just doing way number 7. I want to be charismatic. Way number 7, I'm right about everything. I don't care what everybody thinks. Right. It's very good.
The river gets down and he's changing the wheel and he's listening, and of course he doesn't know what he's doing. So that's the marshal, is that we're not all equipped to fix wagons. We've
right.
got to do what we can do. We can do, right. Just
we have to know our limitations.
Right, right, right. And again, something big. In other words, if it's something that the whole world is saying X and I'm saying Y and I believe I'm right, for sure, the more important the question is, we need to run it by other people. We must run it by other people, or you can... You can take pretty much any of these lectures and turn it to turn it around for you. It's very, very important that we spoke about that for a minute. Okay. In the pursuit of meaningful achievement, what makes a person more impactful? Acting according to a subjective opinion, which can change at any moment, or according to an outside objective standard. Obviously, it is more meaningful to fulfill what is objectively right. Judaism says that in order to discover true meaning, we have to be in touch with what Hashem wants, because Hashem, being outside the bonds of human ego and partisanship, is a source of objectivity. In essence, he defines what's good. Objectivity and humility are linked ideas. Objectivity means the ability, gives us the ability to rise above selfish desires and do the right thing for the right reasons. That leads to humility. When you're objective, it could lead to humility. If you're subjective, then you can't. Moshe, again, was called the most humble because he stood before Hashem with the utmost respect, with awe, which we spoke about. Moshe knew his place. Anything else precludes room for Hashem to fit in. That's why the Talmud likens arrogance to idol worship. You see where the step he's going? Both push away the presence of Hashem. Arrogance and idol worship means I don't believe in Hashem. Arrogance is me. Idol worship is another. That what?
Also,
exactly.
Also, anger is like
Anger also, exactly. In any situation, ask yourself, what would Hashem want? Do what he says and always doing the right thing. That, again, it's just simple. It's written so simple. And, you know, an eighth grader or a sixth grader can understand it. That alone. If we ever have a situation, and I used this a couple of weeks ago, you have a question, you're not sure what to do. This happens every day or every week. What does Hashem want? What does Hashem want me to do now? What, again, I'm thinking about this, something in particular right now. I want to go see somebody out of town, but I'm going to miss Minyan. So I'm actually going to ask the Rav Shaila. But I really need to be there for this person. But I'm going to. So what does Hashem want? That's even harder. That's not, I don't know the answer to that. I'm going to miss Minyan. I have to be at Minyan. There's laning that day. It's Asar B'Teves. But this person really needs. So again, so and that's a fine line. But right, Baruch Hashem. But sometimes it's much easier. This one's a hard one. Other times you really want to do something, but if you take a step back, what does Hashem want? Then the cards are out. You know what Hashem wants. But you have to ask the question. Because if you don't ask the question, and again, similar. I want to repeat because it's similar. Because we're constantly making decisions. I mentioned to you one or two times ago. Instead of agonizing over a decision, and I tried this also recently, we have a decision to make, and often it's not simple, write it down. Write the pros, write the cons, and give a number to it. If something's very important, give it a 5. If something's less important, 1. Add it up, and then you got your answer. And if you really try it, instead of agonizing like most of humanity does for days and weeks, if you just be objective, that's what he's saying here, be objective. It's not simple, it's not. One of the lines, again, he uses here, I mentioned in the past, but I like this line, he uses the word to be impactful. Reb Noach said again, something to mention every day practically. When he was talking to his students who were leaders and they were going out and doing Kiruv, he told them, don't be right, be impactful. It's awesome, no?
Yeah.
Don't be right, be impactful. Nobody cares if you're right. You want to be able to impact others, influence positively others. Open up to wisdom. Last part before the takeaways. Use humility to open yourself up to wisdom. Without humility, we can't hear wisdom because we're too stuck in our own subjective reality. The Chum asks a fundamental question. Why was the Torah given in a desert? You know what the answer is? Because the desert is empty. What this means is that to acquire Torah, to receive Hashem's wisdom, we must first be willing to open up space inside. One way to attain more objectivity is to give someone else advice. Another circle, you hear that? A way to obtain, I was focusing on getting advice. Reb Noach is saying over here, a way to attain more objectivity is to give someone else advice. Dealing with the external issues will help you see your own situation more clearly. Again, a pearl of wisdom worth $1 billion. You have an issue and your friend has an issue. I can talk about their issue and then take a step back. Why? Right, and I'm objective. When I'm dealing with me, I'm subjective. And there's a piskum, there's a saying in the Gemara, which is so tremendous also, Ein hachovish motzi atzmo mibeis ha'asurim. Somebody who's a prisoner, ein hachovish, somebody who's imprisoned, cannot take himself out of prison.
Does this mean this advice on the subject that you...
I believe so, yes, that's what it seems. It's got to be on what you're talking about. A chovish, why doesn't he just open the key? It's just a simple key. Open the door to the lock. What? It's a joke, it's right here. It's worth 99 cents at Walmart, I can copy. He can't open it, or she can't open it, because she's on that side of the bars. I can open for that person, and that person can open for me. Such a tremendous, tremendous insight. Ein hachavash motzis atzim b'sasurim. So this is similar. If we have an issue that we're facing right now, if it's something that only happens to you, then it's going to be harder. But if we're having some issue, and your friend might have, you can even seek out. Think of a friend who's having that issue. Right, right. So beautiful. Support groups. Exactly. The bottom line, the more you rise above the need for others' approval and develop your inner sense of self-esteem, the more charisma you will possess. Again, look at that jump. Who would have thought that? I wouldn't have thought it. The more, again, you rise above the need for others' approval, you would think the opposite. More, I don't need somebody's approval. You'll have more charisma. You would think I would have more dependence. I'd have more meaning. I'd do more good. It's pretty, again, we have to try it.
Did you define what charisma means?
Let's see from the first page. Let's see.
I mean, to me, charisma means magnetism that people are drawn to.
Right. And he said on page number one, such a person, this is the second to last line, becomes a magnet. If you meet somebody who knows, look three lines before, you meet somebody who knows their place and helps others find their place, makes everyone else feel important. This is three lines from the end on page one. You see, he knows his place and helps others find their place too. He makes everyone feel important because the humble person, if others excel, there's no jealousy or risk of ego crisis. If now it's getting deeper, it's like going deeper. In other words, the charismatic person is thinking about somebody else. If they're thinking about somebody else and spending time on somebody else, then you want to be with that person. It's natural because they care about me. So I guess that's how it brings charisma. Again, he didn't spoon feed us so much. He just gave us that one line. But that's what it seems like. When you, it's two parts. You're rising above the need for others. I'm doing the right thing, and I'm adding that from page one that he's helping someone. So let's see in the bullets if it gives more clarity. Why is humility a way to wisdom? Again, we're in the 48 ways to acquire wisdom. So why is humility a way to wisdom? He's telling us. Humility generates truth and objectivity. That we can understand. Humility is freedom. That we understand too. Your personality expresses itself in an organic, internally generated, and more real way. Humility is pleasure. Arrogance is pain. It might feel good for a second, and then you feel lousy. Humility enables you to embrace others. Again, this is the focus that he was saying on page one. If you're humble and start focusing on me, we're focusing on the other person. Mm-hmm. Humility deepens your relationship with Hashem, because we can hear the Torah was given on, by the Midbar. If I'm open and I'm humble, I can hear the next person speak. Until you know what you're willing to die for, you have not yet begun to live. So again, this I find is a little bit, this was a little bit more challenging maybe than some of the others that were more direct. But the primary takeaway is, do the right thing. Don't be dependent on others. And we're going to add here also helping others. If you help others, then you will naturally become more charismatic and you're accomplishing what you need to in life.